Hello and welcome to the Thursday, December 14th edition of the OK Preps Extra Podcast. I'm Patrick Prince, joined as always by Barry Lewis. I'm a little under the weather today, so forgive me if I sound a little odd, but we're gonna man up, Barry. We're gonna get through this. Barry, let's start with the transfer rule. The OSSAA they proposed it, and now they've passed a rule that grants high school kids basically one free transfer. Is that right? Do I have that right?
Yes.
We've talked about this before, but now that it's official, and for those who didn't hear our discussion back when we talked about it, how do you feel about this rule?
I think that's it's overall it's overall a good rule that I would be in favor of it. I wish, as an old school person myself, I wish it that wasn't the way things were trending these days in society. But it is what it is. Just like we see at the college level, I wish that that players would stick it out more when reasonable at the school that they're at, but that's not the way it is. So I think that this is a good rule overall to because there are some opportunities where it is definitely advantageous for the student athlete if they're, like, say in football, if they're blocked out of position, and for them to be able to showcase their talents. Like, if you're a great quarterback and there's great quarterbacks ahead of you, and you can go to a school where the quarterback position's open, and this will enhance your chance to get a college scholarship. I think that's great that now that you don't have to move in order to be able to showcase your ability. So that's the positive aspect of it. And so that's why, if I had a vote in it, that even though, again, as I said, although I'm an old schooler, I would be in favor of that because, I know that's a lot of expense to have to move, to change residences, and I think that is a positive thing.
Yeah, it sounds like we mostly agree on this, Barry. I'm not crazy about the ruling, but like you, I understand the ruling, and I understand where we are. As you pointed out, I guess I just don't like the high school game more mirroring the college game. Again, I understand it. And you brought up a great point about, a quarterback maybe stuck on the depth chart or whatever. That's a good point. I just think in general, having high school sports mirror what is going on in college is not the best. But again, I understand it. I know where we are with the game and, today's culture, but I understand it. I'm not a huge fan of it.
Yeah, I definitely, when it's, I would like to see in all situations. I mean, my concern is that, and you see this, this is true at the college level too, that at the first sign of adversity or when the going gets tough, that it's just easy to make, let's just move. That's the mindset. And that's what I really, it just disappoints me that that can be too often the mindset. But when there are real, legitimate reasons why a move would be a positive step, I think that's great that now that they're able to do that. That is a positive.
Now, are there any other layers to this ruling that we need to know, Barry? Is it that simple? You get one transfer to wherever, and that's it? Or are there more caveats to this ruling we should know about?
It will probably, I mean, you've got to do it by July 15th, I believe, is the date. So you just can't. So if it's after July 15th and you don't get that free transfer. So that is something to look out for. And I think those are the basic things, but I think there's still things yet to be written in the rule that we'll find out later about.
It's not implemented now, is it? Or is it?
No, it starts with the next school year.
Okay, starts with the next school year. Okay. Well, I mean,
And
I go ahead.
one of the things that reason I'm glad you have the one free transfer is because I will say there are certain situations where most kids seem when they've get approved for these transfers, hardship rulings, and the transfers under the current rules. But there are sometimes where kids haven't been allowed to transfer and have to sit out a whole year that you just wonder why, when 90% of the transfers get approved, why are these 10% being stuck and not getting that approved? So I think that eliminates that. So I just think that's another positive about this change.
Yep, fair point. So what do you anticipate? Do you anticipate the floodgates being open as a result of this? Or I mean, I know time will tell, but just what's kind of your first impressions on how many folks will actually transfer?
Again, Bill Haston wrote a great column about this right after the rule was changed, and just saying deciding you wanted to move from one place to another isn't always as simple as it may appear. When you talk about schools have their capacity sizes for their particular class, like just because you want to a student athlete wants to transfer from school A to school B, that doesn't mean that school B's going to take them or has to take them without moving. So that's also something to consider in this. So I don't think, to answer your original question, I think there will be some increase in movement, but it may not be as much as you might anticipate. And I hope it isn't as much. I hope again that moving is only seen as a last resort. And because I mean, I've seen student athletes in the past, it just seems like at the first sign of adversity, you get demoted from first to second team in some situations, like, okay, it's time to move on.
Well, Barry, Bill Blankenship retired as we kind of expected that he would. It's going to be weird next year not having Blankenship coaching somewhere around here. But Owosso has turned the reins over to Antonio Graham, and you like that hire, yes?
Yes, it seems like it's going to be a very smooth transition for Owosso, and Owosso is a program that has been going in the right direction, and you want to keep it going in the right direction. And Antonio Graham seems to be as well suited to take the Owosso program into the future and keep it going on the right track as anyone. So I think it seemed like he's been the heir apparent for a year or two, and at least. And I just think without he is as well prepared to be a head coach as anyone can be without having been a head coach. He's coached under, obviously, at the high school level, two great coaches, Kirk Frederick at Union, Bill Blankenship at Owosso. I think he's had a chance to, he's been around other great coaches because both those coaches have had great staffs. He's seen how, and also playing for a great program at Union, he's seen it from a player standpoint, coaching standpoint, what it takes to be a great coach. And as again, as I said, that, yeah, you never know until you actually do it, but having not done it before, it seems like he is in as great a position or as well prepared as you can be. Just like, I mean, he compared it to like the first time he's a defensive coordinator. That was a big step. And he was as well prepared to do that as he could be. And that didn't keep him from being really nervous, obviously, for a little while. And but you have to jump in until you do it. You just never know, but he made the successful transition to defensive coordinator, and I expect he'll be successful at this. And being a head coach at a big time program like Owosso It's more than X's and O's. And I think he's been able to observe from a player standpoint and a coaching standpoint all the other things that go in to being a successful head coach.
Yeah, no doubt about it. X's and O's are just a fraction of the job, right?
And he had a great opening press conference, our introduction. So press conference slash introduction, combination Bill Blankenship retirement slash press conference announcement. And I think that went made a great for those who had not talked to Antonio before. I think that was a great he probably he I'm assuming he made with everyone a great first impression. So he was very impressive to me, and not surprised that it was a really impressive introduction. I've first talked with Antonio back in 2004 when he was an all-state linebacker for Union, and that was my first year as the leader of our high school coverage at the World. So I've been following his career as a player and as a coach for about 20 years. So always been very impressed by him.
What's he like, Barry? Just as a guy, what's he like?
Oh, he's obviously, I mean, he's very personable, as people could see last week, and just his football IQ, you could tell back when he was playing, and whenever I've talked with him, it just seems like very high as well. I just think he's got, I mean, you definitely, it helps. We're talking about being a head coach, the intangibles, it's more than X's and O's. Being personable is part of, and being able to talk to the media, those are important things now. Didn't necessarily always have to be that way like 40 years ago. And that, in fact, that's one of the things people ask me, what are some of the big changes from this time from back in the 1980s when I first started covering high school football to now? It's that I think the coaches, players too, for that matter, but coaches are better dealing with the media overall now. And you, because you asked me in our last podcast about Bill Blankenship, and that when I got on the high school beat, leading the World's high school beat coverage in 2004, because I really didn't know Coach Blankenship very much from my time at the Tribune, because he'd just come over to Union at that point. I was wondering, how's he going to treat me as the new kid on the block, so to speak? Because my, and of course, he was, as I said last week, that he was very welcoming. And I didn't know how big time coach, at the high school level would necessarily be that way. I didn't assume they would be that way, because back when I started on the beat, there were some crusty high school coaches. When I was really the new kid on the beat at the Tribune, whoa, there are some coaches that just were, it was either, I mean, there were some good coaches back then from, I'm talking about football. There was like a big distinction between football and basketball. I thought basketball was a lot, the coaches were a lot friendlier and media helpful back in the 80s when I started than they were in the high school football beat, because they were some really crusty football coaches back then. Some just didn't like to talk at all. They could be very intimidating, very old school. So, but you can't be that way now. Well, I guess you could, but I don't think it would end up very well for those coaches. And I don't really know of any coaches like that right now who were like some of the ones I knew back in the 80s. Most of them realized that the media, dealing with the media, dealing with the community, and being personable, that's a big part of the job, especially at the higher profile programs.
Do you feel like the Owosso roster is in good shape next year in terms of Graham in his first year?
It's in very good shape. Of course, just like all programs, you're going to graduate some people. We'll have to find a new starting quarterback. But sometimes you don't know who, the way things are going at the big schools these days. You just someone's going to probably transfer to you. That's just the way. That's just reality. So, because no one knew a year ago that Knox Dyson was going to be Owosso's quarterback because he was at Beggs a year ago. So we'll see about that. But otherwise, and especially because I think because Owosso's roster does look really good. Yeah, they're also going to have to they lose their top two receivers. But for the most part, it's looking really good, really talented. It's definitely would be an attractive place for a quarterback, especially now that you got free transfers, that one free transfer to make the move to. Owosso's a program you definitely would be interested in if you were a quarterback looking to move up. So roster's in great shape.
Barry, let's talk about the Tournament of Champions for a minute. I mean, the field is good every year, but I don't know, man. I was just looking at the field this year. There's going to be some really fun players to go watch.
Yes, you've got the OU signee and last year's State Player of the Year, Dayden Forsythe from Vail. And so it's going to be a Dale Hale opener. How about that? And Hale's got a really outstanding player, Cabron Lewis, who's already scored more than 40 points in the game this year. So that's going to be a great first round matchup. And of course, the winner of that game would likely face Owosso with Jalen Montanati. So you've got star power all over the place. And then you got Edmund North, two-time defending state champion, Dylan Warlick, two-time state tournament MVP. And it is a loaded tournament. It's going to be fun to watch.
I'm real excited, Barry, to take our assistant sports editor, Juwan Lee, to go watch those games. You know, he wrote the column for us recently about, you know, being in Texas for most of his life and career, and now he's been working with us since about June, isn't that when he came here?
Yes.
And so, you know, his desk is right next to mine, so I've tried to kind of share with him stories about the area and some of its history. And I told him, I was like, we really need to get out to some basketball games because there's always great basketball in this area. I mean, there like there is in football, but we always have, you know, great, you know, Division I talent to go watch. So, so we were talking about that the other day, and he said, oh yeah, I want to go to the Tournament of Champions. I'm like, perfect. That's the perfect thing to go to. So, yeah, if you're looking to go watch some good games and some really standout players, man, that's going to be a great one. It's always a great tournament every year, but it's, yeah, definitely one to go check out.
And it's at the BOK Center again this year, December 27th, 28th, and 29th. So basketball all day.
Yeah. Well, Barry, we were talking before
And
we
don't want
went
to forget the girls' side either. The girls' side of the bracket has a lot of outstanding talent too. Defending champion Lincoln Christian will be back. And Sepulpa, of course, defending 5A champion, just a great field.
Yeah, Darlene Caleb always has a great team and players worth watching at Sepulpa, so no doubt about it. Before we went live today, Barry, we were talking about Wayne McCombs, who his service was yesterday in Claremore, and you posted a very thoughtful and moving tribute on Facebook. So I thought maybe we could just talk about him for a minute and kind of share some memories of a local historian and also a good friend of yours.
Yes, a new we've been friends for over 40 years back to when he was working at TU and I was a student at TU. So just an amazing man. Obviously most people know about him for his base because he loved baseball so much, baseball historian and just an overall sports historian. It wasn't just baseball. He wrote the great baseball book, Let's Go Tulsa, that I think is still the standard that all books of that type will be compared to. It was a masterpiece. And I was actually, as he wrote in the book, it all started from a conversation we had back after a TU Houston football game in 1985. And for the next 4 years, he was really devoted to writing that book. And it was, I've is yeah, I've looked at it. I've got it right next to me right now, just naturally, because whenever I want to look for baseball, I've referred to it tens of thousands of times through the years. So he did a great job compiling it. But as much as he loved baseball at all levels. And I think this is why we're going to be talking about Wayne on the high school, on this high school podcast. Every year he held the Claremore baseball Field of Dreams baseball banquet in the winter. It's in January. And had some great guest speakers through the years. People like Rick Monday, Phil Niekro, Frank White, Jim Sundberg, Jerry Royce, could just go on and on. Keith Hernandez scheduled for this year. That banquet benefited the Roger State baseball programs and also Claremore High School baseball program, Claremore youth baseball programs, summer league programs. And he loved all high school sports. He was once way back when, like in the 70s, a high school stringer for the World. And but he was particularly devoted to Claremore High School athletics. So wrote in the obit that when the Claremore coach is referring to, if you're ever asking about whether his team set a record, it's like, go ask Wayne McCombs. He would be right on it, which he was that night at the Claremore playoff game I was referring to in the obit. So yeah, he would give us plenty of Claremore High School statistical and historical information through the years. So he loved sports at all levels and just an amazing man, like amazing example. So he definitely will be missed a lot.
Tell me more about his book, Barry. I'm not too familiar with it.
Let's Go Tulsa. He wrote it was published in 1990. The name came from the Tulsa baseball Oilers back at the time, the Driller's predecessor. They used to have a guy who was a super fan and later worked in their front office named Andy Andrews. And for like 30 years, he would have the famous phrase that everyone in the park could hear, "Let's go, Tulsa," to sort of get the team revved up. So that's why led to the title of the book, and it was just the comprehensive history, something that you didn't see at that time at all anywhere, of Tulsa professional baseball from 1905 through 1989, year by year stats of each year, year by year summary. But it was more than the, and all of course all the records you would want, both. But it was more than that. It was not like just some dry record book, which would have been great just on its own. But he wrote some great stories, a part of that made Tulsa's baseball history come alive. So it wasn't just a bunch of nameless names, facts and figures. It was a great, it was just a great history book. And he wrote other books since then. A couple of other books on Tulsa baseball since then. That was the, and they were good too. That first book, Let's Go Tulsa, that is really the book that I think other books of that type in other cities are measured to. It was a masterpiece that he poured himself into for 4 years.
Can you still get it?
You can probably find it on Amazon.
How old is the copy that you that's on your desk that you referred to?
Oh, it's I bought, thankfully I bought two at the time. So because one is like worn out because I've looked at it so many times through the years. It's had with each year they had each year's recap, they had a team picture to go with it. And there's just tons of pictures to go in the book as well. And it's just for anyone interested in Tulsa baseball history at all. That's it's really very in a very interesting book, just talking about all the great people who've been a part of Tulsa baseball history. It wasn't just about the Oilers either. It was in the players. He had a section on the media, a section on exhibition games through the years, major league exhibitions, tons of major league baseball exhibitions through the years, our other special baseball events, just storing all the owners through the years just made them really come alive. And just about anything you'd want to know about baseball and Tulsa's in that book. And I know he dreamed, he always really wanted to update that book. And but it is a comp it so that was a dream of his that he wasn't able to complete, but although he did update it, he did have a bit of an updated record book that he did issue back in 2005. But
Have
yeah,
you
I would be in a press box, and if like a pitcher, like an example, pitcher throws four wild pitches in an inning. And people wondering, I wonder if that's ever happened before. Well, there would be Wayne before he even asked him, or sent a text to ask him. He would be texting me or calling the Brian Carroll with the Drillers and saying, this last time four wild pitches in an inning occurred was on June 22nd, 1952, or something like that.
It's kind of like the Tulsa version of the what's the Elias
Yes.
sports. It's kind of like a Tulsa version of that in a way,
Right.
it sounds like.
Yes. I mean, he was amazing. And his sports memorabilia collection's pretty incredible. Yes, he just lived an amazing life. And, again, loved sports at all levels, loved TU, loved high school sports too, and just also did. Last 14 years, he did a great job as the director of the J.M. Davis Gun and Historical Museum in Claremore. So he was just very versatile, not just a sports guy, and just did prison ministry or jail and prison ministry, and just quite a tremendous example.
Have you ever thought about writing a book? You're kind of a historian in your own right.
Well, maybe after I retire.
What would you write on?
Don't know. That's I don't know. I've been asked that time or two. Just would have to have time to think about that.
It would be really good, whatever it was. You've been around a while and you've seen so much, like whatever. You could write a pretty cool book just on your Thanksgiving trips to the Dallas Cowboys alone, almost, I feel like.
That'd probably be a chapter. Yeah.
Yeah.
Coaches I knew.
Sure, that'd be a good one.
Players I knew. So.
Well, Barry, shall we go to catching up? Who you want to catch up with
Yeah.
this week?
Well, Bixby's Parker Fredrickson, our player, all-world player of the year this past year. He is now at Wake Forest and doing really well. Wake Forest is 6-3, and he's playing in every game. He's averaging 5 points a game. Had a career in his last game. He had a career 19 points in a win over NJIT. So he's really made a good transition to Wake Forest. So that's been great to see.
Yeah, for
And
sure.
and
Go ahead.
Patrick. And there's quite an exciting ending to an NFL game the other day, that I know from a couple of players that we're very familiar with here around here.
Yeah, so I was watching the end of the Baltimore Ravens, and I'm watching this incredible punt return by Tylan Wallace, who's the backup punt returner, but was in the game in crunch time and returned a punt. Pretty impressive return, made some nice moves for a touchdown. But also what I noticed is the player who kind of gave the last block that sort of gave him the clear path to the end zone was none other than Justice Hill, who, is a running back by trade, but he was on the punt unit, at least for that play, and threw a key block that kind of ensured Tylan Wallace scored the touchdown. So, good to see Justice Hill from Booker T. Washington and Oklahoma State make a play. I saw, the back of the jersey during the play. And I'm like, man, that's a good block. Who is that? And it said Hill. And I knew Justice Hill was on the Ravens, but I'm like, it's not that Justice Hill, is it? Certainly. I mean, is he blocking on special teams? And turns out he was. So nice little hookup from a pair of former Cowboys and Justice Hill from Booker T.
Well, in Baltimore, special teams also include, although not on that play, but they also include Jenks graduate Tyler Ott as their long snapper in his first season with Baltimore after a long stint with Seattle. So Baltimore's having a great season. And so it's great to see our local guys being a big part of that.
Oh, I didn't realize that Ott was with them. I didn't realize he left Seattle. How long has he been in the league now, Barry? It's been a while.
It's been a decade.
Good for him.
His last football season at Jenks was 2009. He's a 2010 graduate. And then he was in the Ivy League for 4 years. And so this would be about a decade. Now, he bounced around at the start of his career from team to team, but then he found a home in Seattle for about 6 or 7 years. And now he's with Baltimore.
Very cool. Good for him. Well, anything else on your mind, or shall we leave it there for next week?
I think we'll leave it there as signing date awaits next Wednesday.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Early signing period next Wednesday. And we'll, of course, have all the coverage. We'll be around the area. Do you know where you're going to be yet, Barry, on signing day?
I do not, because usually those things come together at the high school level about in the last 48 hours before they occur. Although we did find out that Union is having a pre-signing day. The day before. So theirs will be on the 19th because they don't have school on the 20th.
Ah, okay. All right. We'll get together next week and talk a little recruiting. You can download the OK Preps Extra podcast for free on Google, Apple, or Spotify. And we're also available on some other platforms. Appreciate you checking us out. Barry, good to talk with you as always. We'll catch up next week.
Sounds good, Patrick.